Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I congratulate the regents for a first step around this, but I do believe that if you are here and graduate from an Arizona high school, you should have the same opportunities that anyone else that graduates from Arizona high schools has.
Thousands and thousands of people asked me to run again. So I talked to my wife and decided to do it. There's a lot that has to be done, and looking forward to returning to the sheriff's office.
It really does feel like the Phoenix of the future starts today. We're going to be a city that will invest in a robust transportation system that includes light rail. Our voters said we want to be able to do multiple things at once. They care about our park system, our libraries, and they want them to grow.
It's really hard to fight City Hall. I mean, the individuals in South Phoenix, the small business owners, the residents that were upset about this, they didn't have a lot of friends. Whereas you look on the other side, the entire establishment had lined up against this. And so that's always going to be a difficult dynamic in any of these types of races.
And with us to talk about the defeats of a pair of Phoenix propositions, along with a primary challenger to Senator Martha McSally and more, are Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting and attorney and former Tempe Mayor Hugh Hallman. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Emily, let's start with you. So Daniel McCarthy is going to challenge Martha McSally in the primary. Where does he go on the pantheon of other McCarthys, like Joseph McCarthy, Eugene McCarthy? Where does he fit?
Just as vilified. In fact, in Republican circles, you know, I would say that McCarthy is Mark Kelly's best friend in this situation, because he is going to pull or attempt to pull Senator McSally so far to the right during the primary that, you know, we've been talking about she didn't pivot last time. She stayed too far to the right, and Senator Sinema edged her out. He's going to make it difficult for her to pivot back from being so extremely right that she'll most likely enter that general wounded and have to face Mark Kelly.
And motivation, just ego as far as we know? Does he actually think he's going to beat Martha McSally?
Well, why does anyone run, Mr. Hallman? No, I think...
Wow. Shots fired.
He clearly believes that he would do a great job. And I think everyone that runs thinks they have a chance. That's why they do it. And you just never know. I mean, I don't think he'll win the primary. There's always a chance that he will. But hitting that buzzsaw of Mark Kelly, he doesn't stand a chance of becoming the next senator.
Hugh, what is going on here? And is this someone who's a legitimate challenger?
Well, in the same way that we had a Secretary of State's race that was overturned for the Republican primary, I think that you could have that result here. Emily and I were not in the same studio at the same time, and each of us effectively had said the same thing, that Martha McSally, when she went to the Trump rally, got endorsed, did those things, had now pulled herself to the right. And I don't know if it was possible then for her to pivot. And what I'm amazed by is that she is still being retained as the candidate for the Republican Party. She's lost a Senate race statewide already. And the challenge is $20 million got spent. I don't think any more money can be spent to change people's minds and perceptions of who she is. As wonderful as I think she is as a human being, the die is cast. And so I don't think she'd beat Mark Kelly even without the primary challenge. But I think Emily's exactly right. This is going to wound her and drive her even farther to the right. She's already endorsed by Donald Trump. So where does this fellow think he's going to go?
Emily, I'm curious about the dynamics of the primary, because the years kind of blend together at this point. Last year, she had two primary challengers, one of whom had really good name recognition in Joe Arpaio. One, especially at least in political circles, had pretty good name recognition in Kelly Ward, who'd already run a statewide race. I wonder if that change, if having Mr. McCarthy, who I think most people have no idea who he is, does that change things? Does that make it maybe less potentially damaging for McSally that she doesn't have a high-profile challenger?
You know, what makes it tough is the situation is a little bit different. And I just want to say to Hugh's last point, Martha McSally kept it very close. You know, it took us 2 weeks to know who won that Senate race. So that was a close race. That wasn't a landslide. But to answer your question, you know, McCarthy doesn't have the same name ID that the other candidates had. But right now, McSally is in the U.S. Senate casting votes, so there's a lot for him to criticize and point his finger at. And so what he's going to do is make her spend money and make her—he's going to try to— he could have the effect of dampening the Republican enthusiasm for her. And she's going to need every single Republican plus some independents to win. And if he dampens that enthusiasm, they're not going to turn out to vote.
So if you're Martha McSally, how do you handle this?
If she wants to remain the senator, she cannot be pulled to the right, and she's going to have to count on the Republican Party's support and the folks who are already supporting her to keep her in position. If she does what she did in the last race and goes to the right to try to respond to McCarthy, I think she's done. Yes, it was very close, and Mark Kelly is not Kyrsten Sinema. But he has still got some really great traction, and I think Martha's biggest problem is the fact that Donald Trump is not going to help pull voters to the Republican Party side at the moment, where it's such a divided party now that pulling the party back together in a way that you get enough support is nearly impossible.
Well, and President Trump is going to have to tolerate Martha McSally differing from him and veering off his track. He's going to have to accept that and embrace it if he wants
like he
her to have a
chance.
Like
he did with John McCain.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the only path.
Jeff Flake. Yeah.
That's the only path. And Republicans are going to have to tolerate it as well.
So, but that's the problem. Republicans are now not strategic and tactical in their efforts, and it's my way or the highway on both sides at this stage, and so there is a complete lack of tolerance. This is no longer a big tent kind of party in a state that had been big tent and libertarian primarily. So somebody this morning criticized, you know, we've got McSally's going in the direction of Barry Goldwater. Yeah, and that's a problem how?
Well, I guess to Hugh's point, Emily, I mean, do you get the sense that is this the kind of thing that Senator McSally might talk to someone in the White House or with the Trump campaign about and say, look, I know your guy endorsed me and I'm still with him, but things have changed a little bit for me here in Arizona and I want to continue to be able to serve here?
Well, absolutely. Now, you know, I don't know if he'll have the discipline to hold to that, but I'm certain those talks are happening. You know, they don't want to lose that seat. They're not going to want two Democratic U.S. senators from the state of Arizona. You know, they're not going to want that to happen. It's all going to come down to how disciplined he can be. And already I hear members of my own Republican Party grumbling that they sort of don't want Martha McSally to sell them out and move to the middle because they want her to win based on their core beliefs. But we're going to have to get our heads around the fact that she won't hold that seat for very long if she's not able to court those independents.
Well, like a lot of Democrats felt about Sinema to some extent.
Correct.
Yeah.
And interestingly, of course, she moved to the middle and then clearly has now become the darling of that party. And they've handled that much better. It's fascinating that the Democratic Party has pulled itself together. I don't think it holds that way because of the upcoming presidential election. So you've got the left and the right in the Democratic Party pulling itself apart. But with that said, you've got four Senate seats that are probably in the game right now. I think it's Maine, Alabama, Colorado, and Arizona. And three of those means that the Senate gets tied, four, and you end up with the Democrats in control of both houses. I don't know that President Trump has the ability to control himself. It's going to be fascinating. If he doesn't, then it's done.
I mean, let me come back to one specific issue related to McCarthy. We haven't heard much about him, obviously, at this point publicly. But one thing we did hear was that he canceled a meeting with Governor Ducey, whether this was true or not, based on something related to gun legislation. And guns, of course, will in some form, gun reform or gun discussion, will come up in that Senate race, if only because Mark Kelly is married to Gabby Giffords and whatnot. So what sort of position could that put McSally in if McCarthy's pushing for no changes to gun laws potentially, whereas McSally has been a little incrementally at least talking about being willing to reform certain things?
Yeah, it's a horrible position. You know, he's sort of jumping in the race and trying to Donald Trump it himself. And he is going to force her to address those issues. He's going to position himself as defender of the Second Amendment and appeal to those of us that value that. And McSally's going to have a hard time competing with that in the primary and then stepping into a race with Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly, who holds more credibility than any of us on that issue just because of what his family went through, it's a horrible position for her to be in. It's going to be very tough to navigate.
Earlier in the concept of the discussion on McSally's primary, you had two people with very high name ID. I think that's probably the primary difficulty McSally has. Her name ID, she's now a known quantity, but it was Joe Arpaio and Kelly Ward, both of whom by that election were known what they were. Nobody was moving the needle anywhere. The votes were already cast once those names were in the bucket. And that, I think, brings us to here we have Joe Arpaio now announcing for sheriff again. Does anybody think we don't know who Joe Arpaio is? Can you change the outcome of the last election cycle? And I don't think votes are going in Joe's favor. That also is going to impact the McSally race, because you're going to have Joe out there yet again talking about the same issues that McCarthy's talking about. He just was on a video, in fact, recently. It's a YouTube video. I think it's Unboxing with Joe, talking to a toy donut about why guns are good. Now, I'm a Second Amendment guy, but this causes me great distress if that's our best talking points. And that's going to enter this race in that primary election in Maricopa County. It's going to impact McSally's race.
And I think it's going to come down to, in the Republican primary, can you convince voters to vote, and people vote with their heart, not their head. So, you know, can you convince them to not pick the person who's saying the words that you want to hear, and instead choose the candidate that has the best shot to win against the Democrat? And that's the nuance that we're talking about.
Which McCarthy, of course, has already responded to head on, which was, gee, if we're talking about who's got the best chance, that tells you that the candidate's not very good. I mean, it's a problem.
Emily, do you get the sense that this is one of those races where the quote-unquote Republican establishment, either behind the scenes or maybe out in the open, will be actively trying to help McSally and maybe not make McCarthy get even as far as the primary?
Oh, absolutely. And what they're going to have to go through is and be very judicious in who they allow to step forward and who is strategically the best to step forward and throw their arm around Martha McSally and help her. But yes, there will be planning. Now, how great the planning is, how well everyone holds to the plan, no one's in charge. So, you know, but yes, that's the idea.
Well, and Hugh, when you mentioned the Big Ten aspect of it, it sort of makes me think about whether what either party has control over anything, in the sense that Did a lot of people in the Republican Party really want Joe Arpaio and Kelly Ward to run against Martha McSally last time? So is there a discipline that the parties can be able to mete out, or is that in the past now?
It is long in the past. The folks on the harder right hear when the words Republican establishment are spoken, they hear Darth Vader showing up. And so that immediately casts them to oppose anyone that the, quote, establishment, unquote, wants, because they're all about the wrong things, not protecting individual liberty, not protecting the Second Amendment, and many, many other issues. And so that's the challenge the Republican Party now faces. Well, it's currently being led in this state by Kelly Ward, who's then given a great big bear hug to Martha McSally. She is actually demonstrating a discipline was surprised by.
She supported her. It's
quite not just after the, but since she has talked about Martha McSally in very positive ways, and she's demonstrated a discipline that the president has not demonstrated. And if you're right, and the president were able to understand strategically that he loses the Senate or not based on what he tweets, then the Republican Party might hold the Senate.
That's Hugh Holman. Also here is Emily Ryan with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting and former Tempe Mayor Hugh Holman. Emily, let's talk a bit about Props 105 and 106 in Phoenix that went down to defeat.
Yes.
One of which related to light rail, the other to pensions. And they were really strongly defeated. And I don't know if this tells us more about Phoenix or about the propositions. What's your general take on this?
You know, my general take, it was a strong defeat. It was stronger than I think a lot of people anticipated. You know, anytime you are trying to get a yes vote and you're going to the ballot, it's a hard thing to do. Voters default to a no, because when something's complicated and you haven't studied it, you don't want to take the risk of changing the status quo, so you check no. on the 105, which is the light rail proposition, that was had another layer of confusion on it because you were voting no to yes stop or voting yes to end light rail. So it was a affirmative for a negative, and that's beyond confusing. You know, there was also that movement, those petitions were circulated coming out of those South Phoenix businesses, who my heart really breaks for because they had a real fear of what's going to happen to them. And, you know, we're talking about people's life savings in their business, people's home values going down. It was very personal. They had a lot less money. It was a true grassroots effort. If you drove south on Central Avenue, you saw every business with yes on 105 signs all along that future rail route. And they were couched as a Koch brother funded evil empire wanting to, you know, disable our public transit system. And it's just a shame. You know, I do feel bad for the outcome. Now, as it stands, you know, Phoenix residents are going to have to count on the current and any future unknown city council to be strategic about where they put that or not extend it. Or, you know, it's out of the voters' hands and it's back in with, you know, people we may not even know right now that will decide where those lines run.
Hugh, what do you make of the fact of the number of ballots cast? The city says it was the highest turnout for a special election which did not have candidates running, which I know is a lot of qualifiers, it seems like a lot more ballots cast than what folks were predicting.
Phoenix's turnouts are still pretty low, and so suggesting that was an amazing turnout to me is still stunning. The right answer, I think Emily's already touched on, is you had very specific interests trying to support propositions that were worded in ways that completely confused the voters. And then the amount of spending, $1 million versus $250,000, pretty well takes care of most of the messaging. And for everyone who was not along Central Avenue with their businesses, the issue wasn't really all that distressing. Anybody who now lives along light rail and doesn't know what it took to create that light rail and the costs, not just of the $1.2 billion, but the costs to the families and the businesses along there. As I was mayor of the city of Tempe during the construction of light rail, and it was miserable trying to, and we did an amazing job, I will tell you, the staff in Tempe were spectacularly good, especially relative to what happened in Phoenix, of keeping the roadways open, making sure businesses had signage, all kinds of activities to make sure that businesses could survive. And yet still a huge number of old line Tempe businesses went out. In addition, the light rail construction will change the fabric of that community significantly. So if one looks at Apache Boulevard, which for 45 years was desolate and a horrible, troubled place, with millions of dollars being spent on policing and cleanup, there's now an entire new community there of young people, startup families, all kinds of things. But that is not what most of the residents in that area thought they were going to get. And when I was on the council before this came up, was talking, folks, understand, you support this, your neighborhood will change completely. And don't think that you're just going to be the only people at that light rail stop. Because to justify a $1.2 billion investment, this entire corridor has to change. And you have to intensify development and create the kind of investment from the private sector to now have the payoff for your community tax dollars. And that will now happen on Central.
Now, of course, the argument has been made by many that light rail in some ways has been a success, not counting necessarily the construction period in post-construction time. So there is that argument.
Well, we have less than 1% of Phoenix residents actually use the light rail. That's not serving Phoenix residents. It is an antiquated technology.
From your perspective, does that also count Mesa and Tempe? Or
But I think that's different. You saw Glendale turn down the light rail. You know, in Tempe, if you've got a college community that's using that, that's an entirely different thing. In Phoenix, which is where we're talking about, the residents don't use it. It's an antiquated technology in any city. And $1.3 billion with a different plan could be put to far better use, where a lot more of us would have more connectivity, feel safer, be able to use it. I'm afraid that this is going to be taken as a mandate with the overwhelming support you know, Mr. Hallman referred to the people that were behind that proposition. You know, we're talking about the people who are going to build it, who are thrilled now. And, you know, it's going to be looked at as a mandate. We're going to hear the voters overwhelmingly approved it for the second time. And they're going to run that every place they possibly can. You're going to see those lines and wires strung across every street they can get it on.
The amazing thing, and I think Emily touches on it, $1.2 billion spent on the first 20 miles. It is really tough to have the policy conversation about what could that have been used for instead. And in terms of just transportation, the kinds of provision of expanding bus service and all kinds of activities at a significantly smaller cost. The challenge is perception. And this was what I ran into when we were in the throes of building it, that the perception is if you take the bus, you're a loser. Light rail, however, is a technology that's acceptable, notwithstanding that it's we can agree that
until you get on it.
And well, the whole notion of putting rails in a fixed position is what causes the private investment that comes along. It will never outstrip. You'll never get the return on that $1.2 billion if you were running your community correctly anyway, because downtown Tempe is now covered in tall buildings that have nothing to do with light rail. Apache Boulevard, on the other hand, is now changed. With that said, having those conversations is now nearly impossible. And you're correct. You're now going to have, we approved it overwhelmingly twice. But of course, Scottsdale overwhelmingly approved a hockey arena twice. And it ended up in Glendale.
Hugh, let me ask you about the other proposition, the one dealing with the pensions, where voters rejected that one as well. Phoenix, though, still, of course, has an issue with its pensions. So as a former mayor, somebody who, you know, thinks about these kinds of issues, like what does this city do about this now to try to get out of this unfunded liability it has?
It is stuck, as is every city, as is the state. The pretense that somehow we have fixed the pension funds and funding is absurd. And we have a congressman who won because that person was in the legislature and fixed the pension system. And it hasn't been fixed, and it won't be fixed because the interests that are at stake have a greater control over the ballot box than almost any person or organization I know of. Am I being too obtuse? There are three political parties in this state, Republicans, Democrats, and firefighters. Only one of them is organized. Emma?
You know, it's on 106, the idea of, you know, the concept of you've got to pay down this pension before you can spend money on other things and other projects. A great Republican argument. The problem in Phoenix is we're not a Republican city. You know, it's we're higher Democrat and independent registration, and that argument just didn't resonate with anyone.
Well, and also the argument was also made that the hands of council members would be tied. Let me just ask you a general question.
That's all nonsense. The issue is just about touching the pension funds. And the challenge we're going to face is the people who get the benefits today are charging those costs to the future. And the employees who are taking the positions into the future are not going to have those benefits. This is Detroit, and it's pension funds for the automobile workers. This is going to be a tragedy, and that we can't have an honest conversation about that and fix it correctly stuns me.
Well, but it really stuns you? This sounds like Politics 101 to be kicking the can down the road.
Well, and your average Phoenix voter, you know, Hugh makes a good point, but your average Phoenix voter, that doesn't impact them. So what is this? I don't know. I'm going to check no. You could listen to Hugh's explanation and say, okay, that has no bearing on me.
Right. It kind of sounds like what you're talking about with the light rail, where a majority of people don't live along the line and
never ride it, don't have any experience. Here's what I hope.
That would argue for why the light rail piece would have lost. So few people actually use it that you would have thought that the general interest would have overwhelmed that special interest. But the money that funded that was construction money.
Absolutely. And if more people used it, they would see with their own eyes what an ineffective mode of transportation it is. But it's just a conceptual thing that they're voting on. And I'm for public transportation. I want people to be able to get places. Here's what I hope, to put a positive spin on it. I hope that there will be an effort to make it safer, to enforce ridership, to take care of the neighborhoods that it has negatively impacted. People who have saved their whole lives, their home is their biggest investment, and those property damages have gone down. I hope that there will be an effort to make it better.
Well, next week on the show, we will talk with Scott Smith of Valley Metro, ask him some of those questions as well. Emily Ryan, Hugh Allman, thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.